Hello and welcome back to Afternoon Tea. I'm so glad that you could join me for this episode and I'm really excited because we've got another great interview coming up. I'm going to be speaking to Emily Maynock, who's a student at the University of Oxford. She's passionate about fashion, journalism, and she's also going to be telling me a bit about her disability. Unfortunately, I had an absolute disaster when it came to this episode, and about 5 minutes into us recording, I realised that I hadn't actually been recording because the storage on my computer was full. This is so annoying, but luckily I do remember what Emily said, so I'm going to give you a brief rundown to introduce her and so you know exactly what's happening when we get into the real question. Emily is a second year student at the University of Oxford and she studies French. She goes to Jesus College and she's a disability and inclusivity officer on the JCR there. Emily has cerebral palsy, a condition that affects the cerebral cortex of the brain. Emily told me that this condition particularly affects her muscles and often they're very stiff. While she can get around the house without any assistance, she does have a wheelchair that she uses and it has an electric motor that can be attached for longer distances. Emily also said that while there is a Oxford University-wide inclusivity policy, the place that she gets most of her help from is her personal tutor within her college as it's more specific and tailored towards her. Hopefully I should have caught you up on everything by now. And again, I'm so sorry that the first part was missed out because it was really interesting to hear Emily talk about her daily life. However, now we can get into the rest of the interview, which is all about Emily's passions and her activism. Right before the audio resumes, I had just asked Emily why she was interested in fashion and how she pursues fashion journalism.
I've also realised that I find serious journalism a bit too depressing and a bit too miserable for it to be my day-to-day existence. So I think I've learned to be a bit more honest with myself about what I like. I've just been reading more about it. I enjoy reading the history of the various fashion houses, how it can be like a reflection of society at the time, the artistic process that goes into making the clothes. I just find it fascinating.
So what is it that you do at Oxford and like how do you link fashion into that?
Well, I study French.
Oh, wow!
It's not the most difficult thing to link, thankfully. My plan is that I can use my French language to either work at a French fashion house or say if I were to work at a magazine like Vogue, for example, which would be the dream, I would be able to communicate with the French equivalent. And also, you know, use my language skills to apply that to journalism.
Absolutely, that's amazing. Obviously, the fashion industry is known for being cutthroat. Is this something that scares you?
I mean, I'm definitely a workaholic. I'm someone who needs to be doing something all the time, or else I start having a slight breakdown. So I think from that point of view, I'm ready to take on that challenge. But on the other hand, I also have to be mindful of the fact that I still have to deal with chronic fatigue and chronic pain. So I think it will be a balancing act.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Can you explain a little bit about what chronic fatigue is and like how that affects you?
Right, so to clarify, I don't have a chronic fatigue syndrome. For me, chronic fatigue is a symptom of my cerebral palsy. Basically, moving around with cerebral palsy is hard. It's tiring and it means I feel tiredness and exhaustion and body aches pretty much all the time. Also sometimes chronic pain can affect my sleep schedule because it means I can't sleep and then it all just kind of snowballs together. So I can deal with feeling really exhausted on some days, particularly in winter as well. The cold has a really bad effect on me. So I kind of have to take regular rest days where I'm really gentle with myself so I don't burn out completely.
I mean, I don't know, but it sounds like this potentially would be a struggle for you in journalism. Have you seen any barriers to journalism?
Well, it's been kind of hard because I've not really, because of COVID-19, if COVID-19 hadn't happened, I'd have probably done another internship by now. Over the summer, but that's just obviously everything just wasn't working last summer. For me, I'm just trying to build up my writing portfolio while studying has been the most challenging.
Yeah.
Thing, trying to get published, things like that. That's definitely been really difficult. But it's also given me a project to do and focus on over lockdown when I can't do things like my swimming and whatever. Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be difficult, but as well, it's a job that has more flexibility than, say, a traditional 9-to-5, so I think it swings and roundabouts, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely, that's so true. Could you tell me a bit about the project that you've been working on over lockdown then? Because you mentioned that you do have a blog that you write on. Could you tell me a bit about that?
Well, A Shaky Precipice started. I kept sort of saying I was going to do it. And then you know how it is when you have sort of a million projects in your head.
Yeah.
I kept going, oh, I'll get around to it, I'll get around to it, I'll get around to it. And my flatmate just turned around to me and said, right, you've just got to set aside a day and do it. And I was like, all right. So I spent a Saturday putting the blog together, and then I spent sort of more days sort of doing things like the email marketing and all the technical stuff, because for me that's quite challenging. I'm not really an IT sort of oriented person, so that bit for me was really difficult. But I eventually got around to it, and I've worked really hard on trying to make it as sort of professional looking as possible. I'm trying to sort of view it as an investment into my writing career in the future that will eventually sort of pay me back the money and time I've put into it. So
yeah, definitely, that's also a really good thing to do over lockdown, because I think it can be so easy to just say, as you say, like, oh yeah, I've got so much time, like, we're going to be in lockdown forever, I'll just do it at another point. But yeah, that's really great that you've been doing that. So what have you been writing about recently, and also can I ask, like, what's your favorite thing that you've written about?
The thing I wrote about most recently was my COVID-19 vaccination journey.
Oh wow.
I had really horrible side effects.
Oh no.
So I feel like because I'm in group 6, because my cerebral palsy affects my immune system a little bit, and obviously I expect that a big portion of my readers will be other disabled people who can probably expect to have maybe a slightly worse reaction than everyone else. I just thought, okay, well, what would I want to know, you know, 48 hours ago? That would be helpful to them. So that was what I've been writing about most recently. I think my favourite article that I've written about so far was, I wrote about my home city, Manchester, and its impact on the fashion industry and what it's sort of known for, and how it affects, how it's affected my sense of style as well. Because I'm in Southampton at the moment, and I was just really missing home like a month ago, and I thought, you know what, I'm gonna turn this into something productive. So yeah,
that sounds really cool. And I know absolutely nothing about fashion at all, let alone like fashion within like different places in the UK, so I'd really like to read that and find a little bit more out about it. So you've obviously mentioned that you're the disability and inclusivity officer for the JCR at Jesus College.
Yeah.
Do you do any other activism? Because I always feel like whenever I hear stories about people having disabilities, that it's framed as, oh, you should do something to like raise awareness about it. And obviously I don't necessarily think that like lots of people want to do that, or that they should feel any obligation to do that. But are you interested particularly in activism, and do you do any work within that field?
Yeah, so I am. I think you sort of have to be an activist whether you like it or not as a disabled person at the moment, because you have to be your own advocate. You have to sort of know, I don't know, the legal systems or the sort of written inclusion policies of wherever you're going, things like that. You have to know all that stuff, because otherwise you'll get screwed over. I'm also involved with Oxford's Sports Federation Executive Committee. I'm the inclusion officer there, which means we're looking at making sport in Oxford more inclusive, not just for people with disabilities, but also people of colour, LGBTQ people, etc. We're trying to launch a bigger inclusion campaign and audit, but that's obviously hit several roadblocks because of lockdown. We can't really launch it properly.
Are you in your, what year are you in at university, by the way? I forgot, completely forgot to ask you that. You're in your second. So are you hoping, I mean, with the ease of lockdown, that you should be able to go back and launch this in Oxford at some point?
Yeah, I think the Trinity term, we've been told we're going back and that we'll have blended learning.
Yeah.
And I think looking at the using of lockdown, sports should be back around the start of Trinity term, which is around mid-April. So I'm hoping we should be able to sort of hit the ground running, so to speak.
Amazing, that would be great. I'm really interested, obviously you have a lot of areas of interest with like fashion, activism, obviously you're clearly very, very intelligent to be at such a prestigious university. What are your goals in life, like career aims or within activism, like what is it that you really, really want to do?
I guess my biggest thing is I've always wanted to make things easier for the generation that's coming after me, because I've been really lucky with swimming. I've known older girls who've been able to sort of signpost me through sort of applying to university, for example, or how to get a job, or how to navigate the access to work scheme. And I really want to be that for the generation that's going to come after me, because I think I've been quite lucky and quite privileged. I was able to go to private school, which meant I actually got, you know, a decent amount of SEN support. So I kind of feel like now I have a duty to make things easier for other people who maybe aren't quite so lucky. I mean, the state of SEN education in the UK is really, really poor. That's why I ended up with private school, because basically none of the state schools really wanted anything to do with me. So
that's awful. Yeah, that's a really amazing goal. So what do you think, what would you like to see in terms of reform to SEN?
I think SEN needs to, the assessments which assess your support needs to be sort of less, more sort of individualized and more tailor-made to individual disabilities. I mean, I don't know what the system is like now, because obviously me being 11 was nearly 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I did all these things. But when I was looking to go into high school, the issue I struggled with was the fact that the test for getting a statement of need, which is a document you get to sort of say, hey, I need help, you're now legally obligated to give it to me, was based on a reading test.
A reading
and
test?
A reading test.
Oh, wow.
And my language skills are really, really good, so I'd always pass the test, and therefore I couldn't get statemented, which meant that most of the SEN departments, when I would go around the schools on open days, basically were like, well, you're not statemented, so we're not really sure what we're supposed to do here.
That really shows a lack of support. I had no idea that it was that awful. Is that an experience that you think that other disabled people share as well?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a common thing. Basically, I think the systems aren't sort of designed for individualized disability experiences. Just because you get good grades doesn't necessarily mean you don't need support. And I think it's definitely a thing where if you have any sort of disability that sort of isn't, you know, cookie cutter, I think it's definitely, I've seen problems with people who have more rarer conditions, such as Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, for example, which isn't as well known about as, say, dyslexia, which means they have to basically educate their teachers and potentially their STENCOs as well as to how they should be looked after and supported.
That is so tough. And that's something that I just had no idea about at all, which, and so it's awful that that's like an area which really does need to improve, because as you say, like it's you know, these are young children, like 11 year olds going to schools, who are going to need support and a lot of support in different ways, and yet it's just not happening. And I would never have known about that had you not said. So what do you think, on like a broader scale, in terms of I guess like a society-based approach, what would you like to see as someone with cerebral palsy the government do to make access easier, either wheelchair access or just generally people having an understanding and more knowledge about your condition?
Well, I think generally the issue is the Equality Act is pretty much only enforced by lawsuits, right? It's not really enforced by any particular body or anything, which then creates the harmful stereotype that people who sue for things like access and discrimination, or, you know, people go in for a court case looking for money, even though you don't actually get money from an Equality Act case. What you get is the action on behalf of the company, say you sue because you can't get into a building. The compensation, so to speak, is them putting a ramp in.
In
basic terms. But I think there just needs to be more enforcement of the law and the closing of loopholes. The phrase reasonable adjustments gets thrown around a lot, and because that's such a vague term, that gets massively abused by institutions. I read an article, I think last year, where one of the academic staff at the University of Liverpool was told it was a reasonable adjustment for her to basically bum shuffle down the stairs in case of a fire alarm going off.
That's awful. Only last year as well?
Last year, a few years, reasonably recent. It wasn't years and years ago.
Goodness. This is fine if you don't know what happened. Did the article say what, if there was a court case that took place, or if the member of staff sued the university?
I don't think she sued, but I think she was she'd written the article so as to raise awareness of what had been happening to her, basically shame the university into actually doing something, because often that's kind of your only path.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so, so awful to hear. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell me about? Anything else that you'd like to talk about or share with listeners?
Oh, yeah, I'm working with Vivand magazine at the moment.
Oh, amazing!
I think it's been really cool. Yeah, which has been really cool because I've got to work on a publication that sort of loves fashion as much as I did. I tried to get into fashion on student journalism, didn't work very well.
Oh, no.
So it's great to work with a publication that, you know, really loves what the same things that I do. So I've really been liking working with them. They're an amazing magazine.
Oh, that's so great to hear. I'm really, really pleased for you. And I'm sorry that it didn't work out with student journalism, but on to bigger and better things, as they say. I'd really love to check in with you, I guess, you know, over the years even, and see where you're up to, see what you're doing. And hopefully, I mean, it would be great to do it in person at some point. Not sure when we'd be able to do that. But yeah, I'd really like to see what you're doing, because it sounds like you're doing really, really amazing things in the field.
Oh, thank you. And I would love that.
Would you like to, again, if you have an Instagram handle that you use for your blog, if not, no worries, but again, give out your blog so that anyone listening can go and check it out?
Yeah, my blog is shakeyprecipice.com, and my Instagram handle is mmanok, with two kids at the end.
Brilliant. And lastly, could I ask you for a book recommendation? Most people have been talking about books that are just related to the podcast, but I mean, it can literally be anything you want.
I've not read an English book in ages. I think I definitely recommend, I've reread Virginia Woolf's A Room of One's Own recently to sort of inspire me to write. So
lovely.
I think you need some writing. That's definitely a book to read.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, that's good. And you can give a French one as well if you want to. I mean, I don't know if there will be people who know French listening, but it could be quite good.
I'd recommend Lettre de Mistress Henri by Elizabeth Charrier. She's a really cool author with a really cool life story.
Amazing.
Yeah, if you're interested in libertine 18th century stuff, it's really interesting.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being on. It's really been lovely to speak to you. And yeah, I'd love to check in with you, see how you're doing, and see who else is publishing you, because it sounds like you've got a really promising career ahead of you.
Next year, I've got Year Abroad, so if you want to get in touch with us next year.
That is so exciting.
From Paris,
oh my goodness. Cool. Oh, yeah. Do you know what you're going to do on your Year Abroad? That's a good question.
I'm still waiting for applications to come back, but I'll let you know.
Yeah, definitely do. I'd really, really love to hear what you're up to. Thank you so much, Emily. It's lovely to speak to you.
No worries. Lovely to speak to you too.
Thank you so much to Emily for speaking to me. It was so, so intriguing to learn more about fashion journalism and disability within these fields. I hope you really enjoyed the podcast, and of course follow Emily's link that she gave to go and check out her blog. Thank you so much for listening, and hopefully I'll see you next time on Afternoon Tea.